You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, and welcome to today's show on LA Talk Radio, Your Ultimate Life, the show dedicated completely to helping you, yes, you, right here, right now, create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Today, I have a spectacular guest, Joy Flukiger, yes, related, same last name. You got to be related with a name like that. Joy, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me on your show.
You betcha. Joy, so the first thing I want to ask you is, what's it like having the name Joy?
Very joyful, very happy.
Okay.
Well, I think, you know, just the word joy just makes a person feel good. And it just, how can you feel unhappy or sad with a name like Joy? And, you know, there's always joy in the room. I spread it around, right?
Although you do. And that's a fabulous thing that I know. Yeah. So you have a tag there. It says Joy Flukiger, Red Aussie.
Red Aussie.
So tell me about the Red Aussie. Tell me all about the Red Aussie, where it came from, what it is, what you do. Let's talk about
that. Red Aussie. Well, we, you know, as you know, we had a Red Aussie. We have a second one now. He's a daycare. But our first Red Aussie, his name was Aiden. And, you know, when thinking of names like for companies, for businesses, logos even, you try to find a, maybe, or hopefully you try to find a personal connection. So the personal connection is we had a Red Aussie. I thought, hey, that'd be a kind of a cool name for a company. Because I think before it was like Kel Joy or something. It was very uninspiring. Who knows what that's about? And the fun thing today is that there are so many crazy names that it doesn't seem weird, but Red Aussie isn't so crazy. So I thought, well, that'd be a fun name for a publishing company. Right now it's Red Aussie Multimedia, so it includes publishing, social media marketing, challenge design, designing challenges for individuals and companies. And I like the word multimedia because it does encompass so many areas. You're not just focused on one point. So if I want to pivot into another direction, multimedia covers it. So public relations, I do public relations. So I just like it's just an all-round multimedia Red Aussie to honor our Red Australian Shepherd. And that's where that came from.
Well, you know, and part of the story about that one that is also very emotional and touching is our first Red Aussie. We had him for 10 years and he came as a miracle and he left as a miracle. And there was lots of stuff that we won't take time to talk about tonight, but it's a very tender and powerful story about how he came to us and all the things that happened while he was there.
Now we have another one.
We do have another one.
Red Tri. Yeah,
Red Tri colored Aussie. One.
Right, like those the merles. You said you wanted a merle, the red or blue merles. They're pretty gorgeous. They had that mottled fur. They're beautiful dogs. They're a handful though.
We were thinking about getting a dog, right? And if we got the dog, then. All right. Well, I want to dig into that thing a little bit. So you're a master of many things, and I say that both not in tongue in cheek at all. You continue to amaze me. And, you know, we've been together now almost 16 years, and you continue to amaze me with the number of things that you know about, that you get good at, and that you learn. So tell me a little bit of your history, because, you know, the ultimate life's about serving with your gifts and talents. So let's dig into a little bit of how did you get to be a person who can do 25,000 things?
Well, I wonder if it's part of it's, you know, maybe an overactive imagination, some of it, or always wanting to try something new and different. I mean, there's a downside to that too. So I have a natural curiosity of a lot of things. I see something and I think, I could do that. I mean, not, you know, building fences or that kind of stuff, but it's usually around things that interest me. So art, design, let's say cooking, interior design, sewing, crafts, all that kind of stuff. But truth be told, I did say there was a downside to that, is that I have I'm like many people, unfinished, half done, created projects that someday will get done, because there's a little bit of bright, shiny object syndrome when it comes to, I can do that and then move into another direction.
But you don't seem to be. Yeah, you don't seem to be frustrated. Some people, they start things and they have, you know, this BSO and that BSO. And you do have 15,000 half-done projects. And
I love them all. I want to embrace them all. It's like, yeah, I want to do all this stuff.
So I'm going to just list some things that I know. One is upcycling clothing, where you take old patterns and clothing and fix it. One is beading, where you actually do some beading. One is native or indigenous people's art and jewelry and that kind of stuff. Another is making your own jewelry. Another is silk painting. Another is skincare. Another is being a long experienced retailer online. And I could go on and on and on. But it doesn't frustrate you when something sits on the shelf for a year.
Well, it doesn't, because I don't consider it dropped. It's just not right now. Now, not right now, maybe 5 years. And I'm okay with that. I'm thinking that the not right now then is bringing me closer to something that's really great and fantastic. So, for example, skincare. Years ago, when we were still living in Phoenix, I partnered with someone and we were going to create a skincare line together. He ended up getting married, dropping the project. And so that particular project was dropped. Although I still kept in touch with the distributors and finding different ways for packaging. So I've still kept that part up. And then I partnered with a herbalist in Australia. I actually took one of his classes in Australia in Dylesford in Victoria. And that was really interesting. And so I partnered with him to create just a one product, like an oil, an all-purpose oil, all natural, all organic products. He has a very specific process of how he grows things and how he processes it. And then the pandemic hit, so we couldn't travel. That's been put on the shelf. It hasn't dropped, but truth be told, though, I don't know how it would work importing those things from Australia, because Canada has some pretty strict rules about certain things. So I have to look into that. But, you know, there's a lot of Canadian sources that I can also find these items, or, you know what, I can just grow my own. So that's one thing where the skincare is, it feels a little distant, but it's not, because I'm still constantly learning how to do new things with new courses that are coming out, keeping up on mixing things, what ingredients mix well together, how to make good oils. And, you know, so I haven't dropped it at all, but I've kept my fingers firmly in it. I still have my company name that I chose several years ago, coming back from Australia. Well, not several years, a few years ago. Made in Earth Cosmetics, or Made in Earth Skincare. And I have a play on words like Made in Earth or Made in Earth. So I haven't dropped any of these projects, but I do have to put them in order and decide when's the right time to launch XYZ. And people are launching their products, but I always think there's room for one more, and it'll be a great one.
There is, and you're right. So I want you to pontificate for a minute on something, because when people do internet marketing, that's a broad term, and that covers everything from selling stuff on Amazon to affiliate marketing to creating products and services to whatever it is, right?
Yep.
They do this spaghetti technique. They try this and try that, and then they quit doing this. And it seems like a cycle of frustration somehow. And I want you to talk about the mindset about this a little bit. Somehow you have lots of things, many of which you have turned to make money, to create money with. And never in all of our years have I sensed in you from those things a sense of frustration or negativity. The name Joy that you talked about earlier, a little bit jokingly, seems to be completely true. So what's going on in your head that lets you do different things, try different things, have some work, not work, come back to them later without having it be heavy and, you know, bleh?
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder where that comes from. Is it, what type of, I mean, it's not like I get up and say, okay, I can do this. This program's going to work. I don't think of things that way. I just get up and it's like, okay, I'm going to do this. And it either works this time or it doesn't work this time, because it's all an experiment. If you don't try it at all, of course, it's not going to work. Even things with when it comes to software. Software, some packages, some software programs are notorious for having glitches. And, you know, I've spent a lot of money on different software packages to do different things. Some work just really, really well. And others, I keep crossing my fingers thinking, gee, I wonder if it'll work. But then there just comes a time where you have to either keep going with it, you know, master it, or just drop it. And I'm okay with dropping it, even if I've spent X number of dollars on it. It doesn't really matter. If it's not working, it's not working. If the stock is going down, you know, you want to lose everything, or do you want to sell and get something out of it? So it's just a mindset of, it's an experiment. I'll try it. I hope it works. You know, I do a lot of research, though, when it comes to finding certain products or software. I do test it out. And when they do have those trials for 30 days or whatever, I take advantage of it and test the heck out of it to make sure that it's something that I would want to invest in long term. I don't want to have 20 products, 20 software packages that I have to master and learn. You know, a few in your stable is really all a person needs. And get really, really, really good at them so you know them inside out. So the ones I do have, I know them inside out. Now, I don't have time necessarily to use all of these features or all these programs, and that's why I hire, outsource it, you know, let somebody else do it. But if there is a problem in the middle of the night, things happen, I can at least troubleshoot it as well. So no, I don't get frustrated when things don't work out. Maybe, you know, maybe in the moment, I know there's one software package, they came out with their brand new edition, latest in 1,000 different ish, you know, upgrades, and the thing just doesn't work at all. So that set me back a good 6 to 8 weeks, because I tried to make this thing work and nope, I reverted back to the old one and everything's fine. So, you know, that was a momentary frustration, but I didn't drop the whole thing completely, but I did certainly drop that portion of it. That was a dud. Yeah.
Thank you. That's fabulous. And the reason I asked that is, I was just on a coaching call with a client and we were talking about a principle that has very much to do with creating your ultimate life, a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And here's what we said. You know, everybody has 20,000 things to do. Or, and they might, that's a to-do list. I have 20,000 things. Or you might have one big thing that's like going wrong and it's really frustrating. And what we discovered or what we talked about was it isn't the big pile of things. It isn't the things. It is your relationship to the pile.
Right.
Or your relationship to this one thing that's going wrong. And somehow you have a unique and powerful ability. And I can attest to it because I know you, obviously, to have a relationship with the thing or the pile of things
right. That
is resilient, it is healthy, it is happy. Yeah. I want you to talk a little bit about that because I think it's one of the keys to our success, and it certainly makes you a lot of fun to have as a business partner.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I have a... Well, maybe except for there's some very few instances to the exceptions, but I just have a positive outlook towards life. I haven't really suffered a whole lot of really terrible tragedies or massive setbacks or have, you know, because some of your guests have gone through just unbelievable challenges and I haven't had any of those. You know, I've had a blip here and there, you know, landed in the hospital for high blood pressure that the doctors couldn't explain. And, you know, that was scary. That was life threatening. But then I'm the type of person who says, okay, I'm presented with this set of facts. What do I do about it? What can I do to make it better? Not in, you know, 6 months from now, but now, what can I do today? And of course, then, you know, I ask if they're in front of me, the doctors, endless questions, and I go to the internet and, you know, and I do my research and I'm armed with the information that, okay, this is either going to work or I've decided that it's not going to work. So it's just a matter of, you know, getting the information. I have a I have an optimistic outlook and I always think something will work out because why not? It can work out for other people. Why can't it work out for me? I mean, I'm easily as smart or as talented or have XYZ as much as the next person. And usually what separates us from them are doing things, getting it done, consistency. A lot of people just give up and they don't try. Sort of like that digging for gold or whatever the story is, and he's 2 inches from the gold and he gives up, and then the next person gets it. So I want to be the person to exhaust it and have a result. Of course, you know, within reason, there's some things obviously that, you know, I'm not going to do something stupid or dangerous that I would deem that, but you know, I've got a good outlook and healthy perspective towards things. I think that's very helpful. And optimism. I think things can get done as opposed to things cannot get done. So I will find the way to get it done where others may quit or give up.
That's a really powerful thing. And I want to, you know, I coach people all over the world. I have lots of different clients, and you've known many, many of them, or known of them a little bit over the years. But that piece of making a choice on purpose to be optimistic, to assume that things will work out, that there is a way to fix it, find it, get it, make it work. Yeah. And the story is the 3 feet from gold guy, and that's actually right. A book. And they may have made it into a movie, I don't know. But it was a real life thing, right? The guy exhausted all of his money and resources and quit, and it turns out that the tunnel that he dug was 3 feet from an extremely rich and productive gold vein, and so he wasted all that and got nothing.
Okay, so with that story then, with that guy, yeah, I mean, do we know his name? Probably not, because it's like, we don't know the people necessarily, you know, we don't keep track of the failures or the people who lose. We keep track, and we make movies of and books about the people who win. So maybe this person would have a footnote. Yeah, yeah, so-and-so bought, you know, whatever his name is, didn't get it. But so-and-so got the glory. May not have done all the hard work compared to the other person, but they persevered and they got the gold. So that's the difference.
Yeah, it is. And the funny thing is, yeah, people do know about the guy that dug 3 feet from gold. But yeah, the reason they know about him is because somebody came behind and found it.
Exactly.
You know, if he'd just gone home and quit and it would have been 3 feet from gold, it would have been another empty hole in the ground.
Yeah, they're going to make a movie about he just, oh, darn. Nobody wants to read that book, go to that movie, buy that T-shirt. You know, I tried and failed. That's, you know, nobody wants that. So I think today, especially, we need the inspiring, uplifting, can-do type of spirited words, phrases, and the motivation.
Why do we need that? Why is that so in demand today?
Why is it in demand? Is it, you know, when we use the phrase common sense, we say that, and we say that all the time, oh, it's common sense, but it's not common. It's uncommon common sense. It's not common at all. So when, you know, we need this, you look at the news, you look at especially cable news, this channel, that channel, they're absolutely opposite from each other. But each side swears that they're telling the truth and the other people are, you know, whatever they are, they're evil, whichever side you're on. And I think that's draining for people, especially inflation. You know, I don't know, housing prices going up or down wherever you live, and food prices are going up and up and up. And maybe it's that sense of frustration that people feel that they're out of control. They just don't have enough control over their lives, what happens to them, that it's easy to sink into the pity party. And there's a lot of people who will keep you company there. But, you know, it's not going to lift you up out of where you are. The phrases, the memes, the words, however superficial it is, somewhere someone looks at that and is going to say, huh, maybe I do need to make a change. You know, that's where a lot of podcasts are very uplifting and motivating and inspiring for people, because they hear other people who may have been in a similar circumstance and say, okay, well, I can do that. A meme alone isn't going to change your life unless you want it to change your life. You have to decide that I'm going to live that meme, and you know, only you can take the first step to do it. I can't do it. You know, you have to do your own push-ups. You can watch someone do the push-ups and maybe get some good technique, but nobody can do them for you.
So yeah. I love that. I call that work all personal development. PD push-ups, personal development push-ups. So you had something happen in connection with us, we did, that was a very serious application of what you've just talked about. Pity party groups and determined to be sadness and everything else. So several years ago, when I got very, very sick and died and everything in the hospital, two things happened. One, it was sudden, it was unexpected, and it was completely and absolutely debilitating.
Yep.
So I was off the table for in the hospital for a month, and then for months afterwards, recovery.
Oh, yeah.
So suddenly you were faced with the need to scramble and do stuff, and that's less of a thing that I wanted to talk about. Maybe we will in a minute. But in your research, and I want to talk about research later because you're the best researcher I've ever met. I've never seen anybody that can find stuff out like you do. But in your research, you were digging around to find out about the illness that I had, the bacteria, the superbug, and you joined some groups that were on Facebook to talk about it, to learn about it, to hear the experiences of other people. But I remember distinctly after a while, you came to me and you said, I can't stand being in these groups.
Right. That's right.
I want you to talk about that. What was going on? And the disease is terrible. It's fatal. I died, right? I wrote a whole book about that. But I want you to tell me, what were you seeing in the context of what you just said about how the world is focused on negativity, the need for optimism and positivity? Because you were a bright light in there. So talk about what happened, what you noticed, and why you finally said, yeah, I can't do this.
You know, and that's been several groups. One was about blood pressure. One was this one with the, you know, the superbug group. And you know, they all start off pretty good. People are genuinely seeking help. And then there was one other group that was just, I think it had to do with depression. It was too depressing. Because it felt like there's all this information out there and a lot of knowledgeable people in these groups, these people who have either gone through these experiences personally or family members or friends, or maybe they're in the healthcare business themselves. And so they're genuinely putting forth, try this, try that. Because, you know, with science or with medicine, it's kind of, you know, is it part science, part not science, it's luck even. There's a whole lot of things going in as to whether, you know, some people beat something or don't, or get over it or don't get over it. Genetics, there's a whole mix of things that goes on to make this up. So a couple of these groups, you know, you start off, you know, you offer help, you offer, you know, so you become a resource. And I became a resource in this particular group because I read everything there was to read about this particular superbug. I even contacted the lady who wrote sort of the Bible on this. She's some sort of scientist and medical doctor in the U.S. And she wrote this book about it and I devoured it. And then I contacted her and, you know, got some additional information and some, you know, what exactly do we do? And so it was a lot of trial and error. And then posting these things in the group, there's a lot of supportive people. But then you have the people, it's like, yeah, but I tried this or I tried this one thing. And then they just, it's like they give up. And not only do they give up, though, but it feels like some go out of their way even to discourage other people in the group from getting help and getting healthy and moving on out of the group eventually, too. So, you know, I just got to the point where I thought, it's too negative. And then we had people in the, you know, then you have people in every Facebook group. They join the group and they're asking for money and soliciting. And so I just thought, yeah, I don't need this. But interestingly, there's many people from that group that I've become friends with and that we still exchange stories. And occasionally I will go back into the group and make a comment. But, you know, truth be told, I like the Cats on Roller Skates video for entertainment and for something uplifting. But people even find fault with those groups too. Well, the poor cat, or are you sure they weren't, you know, enslaved to do just, there's just a certain segment of the population of people who just want to complain. You know, and if other people are having fun and enjoying themselves and laughing, they want to be the downer of the group and come in and, you know, rain on everybody's parade. So you can't escape that. But maybe, you know, can we push them out? Can we discourage them from being, you know, we'll kill them with kindness and happiness and maybe they'll just go away because they're not going to get any traction from being the downers in the groups I was in. So, yeah, I've had to leave some.
So I want to talk something about something else now. We're you know, my goal, our goal as a business is to help 50 million people to discover and serve with their gifts. And as a corollary to that, that means that if you want to, and I'm talking to you, but I'm also talking to all the listeners. If you right here, right now want to, you can take the gifts that you have, ones you've cultivated, experiences you've had, you could take that and you can use it to make, to serve. And in the context of serving, you can make a living. So the premise of your ultimate life is you can have a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And joy, yes, you, joy. Purpose, prosperity, and joy by serving with your divine gifts. Do you believe that's true?
I believe that's true. Now, in terms of doing what I do and, you know, with my gifts and talents, I have a roadblock. And my roadblock is I have to find someone to replace me to help you. You know, so I'll be working on that to find a way to, you know, have someone else kind of take over some parts of what I'm doing, because then it'll free me up to do some other things and get some of the other things onto the table that I've put on the shelf for a little while. That, you know, that takes time. I haven't put that in the step map or on the Trello board yet as circle the date and, you know, crossing off each one that passes by, you know, I haven't done that yet, but maybe I will. But I think as things evolve, because, you know, look at even this show, you know, finding guests for the show, also for your podcast. And there's a lot of work that goes into these, the production of these shows. And I enjoy that part. And so there's ways to be able to hand it off to some other people. We've got a gal who, you know, acts as your podcast manager right now, and she does an awesome job. So what are some of the things that we can do, that I can do to, you know, enhance her profile in that field, and then put on some of the things that I am looking to do to help spread my message and serve with my divine gifts and talents. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. So step one. Replace myself.
We've talked about that 100 times and eventually we're going to do that.
Bar after the show, it's like, what did you say that for? What
no, you, that's all it, all
what?
True.
Is this news? New Joy's no. Replacing yourself. Oh, no.
What do you think, if you were to serve, if you were to think about divine gifts, like you have insatiable curiosity, you have a great ability to research, you learn well, you're very multi-talented. But my question is, if you said, I am serving people with my gifts and adding good to the world in my way, what would you say those are?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. You ask tough questions. Do you ask everybody these tough questions? Or is it just...
Of course I do.
Special treatment.
No, special treatment.
We'll see how joyful Joy is after this question.
No, I've asked people all the time, so tell everybody exactly what you're doing to add good to the world. So my way of phrasing that for you is, what are your gifts and talents? What do you do really well that's your gifts?
I think you've touched on one of them, too, that was research and a curiosity, especially trying new things. Remember a few months ago, you know, ChatGPT came out and everybody's like, ooh, it's either really, really good or really, really evil. And at first I thought it was really stupid. I thought, what idiot would use ChatGPT to write their own posts and come up with titles? I thought, I'll never do that. And of course, today, a few weeks later, I love ChatGPT. I've completely changed my mind because I started using it. I thought, wait a second. That's better than what I could have written. And it does it in like seconds. So I think, you know, I pass that information on. And how that helps elevate what I'm doing and helping others is, in my world, in my sphere, to be an influencer and saying, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? Well, the worst that could happen is one time I did it and it spit out something that was like completely like bizarre, you know, some sort of cancer and this and that. It's like, yeah, no, she never had that. So, oops. So yeah, you got to check it. But boy, as in terms of being a time saver and helping you, I think it helps you become even a better writer, because you then look at the words that ChatGPT spits out and you think, okay, is that something that I would say? Would I use that? How could I improve on that? What little spin can I put? How does that elevate somebody else? Well, I think it encourages other people to give it a try and just reach out there, get out of your comfort zone. You're in, you know, you're in front of your own computer screen in your home office, probably the door's closed. It's not like anybody's going to see you and a massive fail that it didn't work, you know, just keep trying, reach out to other people. I freely give information and people want to know, you can just ask me. That's no problem at all. You know, I think if the more people use it, maybe it'll encourage other people to rise up as well and produce better content for, you know, your audience to consume. You know,
there's something I know about you that I know is one of your gifts, and this is, you've just touched on it, and I want you to talk a little bit more about it. Some people, when they know something, and it, maybe they've acquired that knowledge or skill at great work, they are scared that if they give it away or explain it or help somebody do it, that they will become valueless. Well, if I give you everything, what am I going to sell? Kind of language.
Yeah.
And one thing I know about you is you are always, like, I've never seen you, it doesn't matter if it's about taking care of cats or dogs or, you know, anything, and internet marketing and everything, and you become an expert and you're into all the high-level people's groups and everything else. I couldn't even list the number of things. But you are always 100% freely give everything, everything you know, everything you have. What do you think? And what do you say? Why do you do that? And two, what do you think about the idea that somehow you'll become less valuable or not very something because you're so free with all of the work and information that you gather?
Yeah. Well, you know, part of it is information is free anyway, you know, so I can tell people everything there is to tell about, let's say, for example, ChatGPT. I think the truth is the majority of the people won't do it. You can give them all the information and still at the end of the day, it's like, well, yeah, no, I tried it once and it didn't work, and they'll quit or give up. I think where the value comes in, or, you know, I used to teach people how to use eBay because I was one of their eBay's top seller years ago, to the point where they had eBay University and I was one of their instructors. And, you know, so giving the information away, it doesn't matter because they'll be able to find the information anyway. But maybe my spin on it, my take on it, the way I interact with people, the way I teach someone how to do something, you know, they may do it or they may not do it, but then they may come to me and say, I could do this by myself, but I don't want to. I need your help. Can you help me do this? I'll pay you to do this for me because we pay for shortcuts. Sometimes people just don't want to learn all these new skills and softwares and things like that. And they want the shortcut. They want the accountability. And that's where I come in. So I'm never afraid that someone's going to, or maybe somebody will leapfrog over me. I don't care because I'm staying in my own lane. You know, I'm not worrying what everybody else is doing or if someone's catching up to me or they're going to pass me. I don't care. That I think that's just a distraction from what I'm doing and where I'm going. If I'm always looking in the rearview mirror, wondering what somebody else is doing or looking over in somebody else's lane, I'm not paying attention to my stuff. And if I'm not paying attention to my stuff, they're not paying attention to my stuff. Who is? Like, who is then driving the bus if I'm not driving the bus? So I stay in my own lane. I don't worry about what somebody else is doing. Yes, I'll help you if you want my help. If you don't want my help, fine. I don't care because I'm busy enough as it is. So I just have a different take on it. Use me, don't use me. I really don't care. I'll give you the information that I have. Now, to a point, I mean, if somebody's going to just keep sucking your time all the time, well, then it becomes to a point where it's like, well, you know, I got to start charging you for my time because I got stuff to do. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the beauty of social media is that people post a lot of stuff. And sometimes people are a little cagey where they say, well, I don't want to give everything away because then they won't hire me. And that, I think that just shows that type of mindset, you know, the shrinking, not expanding mindset. If you think someone is going to then get something and you know, make something out of it, so what? So they will, you know, big deal.
So I love that. And it's one of the things not only do I love about you as a business partner and a person, but I think it's a characteristic that helps people as they create their own expression of their gifts and talents. I mean, you've said so many things that I would repeat. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Don't worry about what other people are thinking about what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, don't worry about what they're doing. Don't worry about what they think about your stuff. Just do what's there. And you're a absolute epitome of all that truth in a way that I have rarely seen. I want to move over to publishing for a minute. Publishing, you have learned how to be a world-class publisher in terms of getting books to number one bestsellers, in terms of editing, in terms of cover design, in terms of press or news releases to get publicity, in terms of marketing strategy. And you didn't know anything about that at all, except you are an expert at layout and design in your old universe of, you know, back in the old days before all the stuff.
Yeah.
So tell me about the journey to go from nowhere to, I would consider, a world-class publisher.
Well, it was a long, it was a hard journey. It's not, it wasn't an easy journey. Back in the day when you decided to write a book, they're just, today it's like everybody's a publisher. You know, everybody can help you get this and that and write your book in 2 days, 1 day, 24 hours. And so there's the marketplace now is filled with a lot of people. It's not filled with a lot of people who've been doing it a long time. When I started researching how to publish your book, I did have an advantage because I'm a designer. I did layout and design, absolutely. So I had a leg up on people in terms of getting that technical piece created. That's a fairly difficult piece to do. It, you know, a book is a book. You know, how it gets printed, you know, you don't want it to be in the discount bin because the spine didn't match and all that. So it's I wouldn't say that it's necessarily easy. A lot of people, they try to tell you, yeah, just drag and drop. I don't think anything is drag and drop, even though they swear up and down that it is. It really isn't, because it's not just, it's not the act of drag and drop. It's having the eye of what looks good for a cover or what is an interior should look like. It's like, you know, you have to have a roadmap. You have to have a step map. You have to have a plan with steps to what goes involved into publishing a book. Now, when I started doing this, I don't even remember where I looked. I think I stumbled across some platform and they did something with that. And I thought, maybe I'll give that a try and see. So I started to try different things and it just came, you know, it just became easier. I started to create my own system. I started to say, okay, what does it take to get this book not just designed, outlined, written, edited, but published and into somebody's hands. I wouldn't say trial and error, but yeah, it was a long road, but I learned along the way, and I watched other people and I talked to other people who were generous with their time, saying, well, this is what I did and you might want to investigate that, and you know, don't use this program for layout design, use this one. And you know, so there's just little tips and tricks you pick up along the way, and then you do your own discoveries. Because I do a lot of research, I find, like, what is the best program to use? You know, oh yeah, you got to have a barcode, and certain programs, you know, certain places where you're going to publish your book don't need one, or you need a different one. So you really have to be a master at gathering all that information and then creating a plan as to what you exactly need step by step to get your book done. So now, you know, I don't even have to look at any list or any sheet. I know what to do. When I work with clients, though, I present this, that these are the things that I do, these are the things that you need to do, doesn't always work that way. So people, for whatever reason, they feel that they know it better, can do it faster, can do it a different way. And then in the end, you know, I've got to fix it and get it to where it needs to be. Yeah, people.
There's two things that you've mentioned repeatedly as skills, and we were talking about your gifts. One of them is your not only ability, but your willingness to research, to go find stuff.
Yeah.
We live in a download and double click world where everybody wants everything to be solved right now. I download it, double click it, there it is, done. Or at very, very worst, in the length of a TV sitcom.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, everything's got to be solved in that 22 minutes.
Yeah.
So what you have an extraordinary ability to research, and you have real patience, and both those are gifts. Mm-hmm. And the patience may be a gift from the divine, but your ability to research is something you developed. How valuable have those two things been for you? And what would you say to people who need or want or feel the yearning to develop or discover their own gifts, even if they're different ones?
Yeah. You know, when it's interesting, the thing about research. So, you know, a lot of the coursework that I took at university involved a lot of research. I studied art and design. I studied history of art, graphic design. So there's a lot of research that goes into researching whatever topic you're on. So, for example, one of the courses I was in, my assigned topic was the Pantheon, the building in that gorgeous building in Rome. I had to go to the library. I had to do all this kind of research and compile different things, go to different sources, find different articles, and read up on the Emperor Hadrian, who created the one that that you go into Rome and see today. You know, but I really enjoyed that part of it. I think it's because my dad was a really good researcher, in his work in archaeology, that's what they do. They research and they study. And so I really enjoy that part of it. I find that it's like, if there's that thing and it's like, gee, I wonder what the answer is. It's part of my DNA. I need to find out the answer, and I need to locate that. That I think that helps in terms of what I'm able to do and the speed at which I'm able to bring products to the market, help my clients, make myself or us even stand apart from somebody else because I'm willing to do those extra steps. And also, if I'm not going to do it myself, then I'm going to find those key people, and I got really good people who are with me to do some of those pieces that I'm not able to do. As far as with somebody else, you know, not everybody likes to do that. A lot of people find that boring or slogging through stuff. Yeah, it is. You know what? You know, if you want to test yourself in doing that, try importing a car from one country to another country. I should have written a book on that. Maybe I still will. Because I did that by myself when we imported one of our cars. There's no like step one, because you're talking to two different countries, and there's two different sets of rules, and some of them you have to do at the same time. So it takes a lot of research and speaking to people. I called the border on each side of the border, the US border and the Canadian border, several times I played a little bit of Columbo and trying to get some answers. And finally, I had a list of, this is where my project management skills came in too, of creating a plan of, we have to do this, we have to do that. Now, the one thing that we didn't plan for is that we got a puppy in the midst of all of this. And he was too young to be left on his own, so we had to take him with us. Now, the funny thing with that, the border, is that at a certain age, puppies have to have their shots. Our puppy was just at the cusp of, yes, he had to have a shot. No, he didn't have to have a shot on which side of the border, because I didn't want to go into Shelby, Montana and find a vet to do this. So, you know, finding those steps, and yes, you're going to have monkey wrenches thrown at you, but you just have to adapt, because you either going to do it or you're not going to do it. And you have to roll with the punches and account the time. And what are these different things that come in that are going to disrupt your day? So there's people who don't like doing that. I do. Maybe that's why some people hire this person or a different person, because they're going to do those shortcuts and they're going to do that stuff for you. The ones who don't, or the ones who don't want to, they're going to find their own way. They're going to find their own things that they do. Maybe they'll do a piece of it, and maybe, who knows? You know, I put the list together of the things. I really don't want to do it again, but I know how to do it. Maybe next time I'll hire someone to do part of those things for me. So it's, you just have to figure it out, really. I did.
You did. And you did a spectacular job. And I remember talking about it and the whole drama at the time. So I want to think about a little bit philosophical stuff. We have a few minutes left, and I want you to, the ultimate life, those are big words, and purpose and prosperity and joy. You're by nature optimistic. You're happy. You dig into things. You do roll with the punches better than anybody I know in my experience. And well, I'm old, you know, and I've met a lot of people.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, though, Kellen, there are times when my eye does start to twitch a little bit. And it's like, okay, just deep breath, you know, and listen to some motivational tape and move on.
All right, that's true. You do have an eye twitch when you get uptight. So let's get philosophical for a minute.
Yeah.
You have so many people that are, you know, COVID put a lot of people out of work, don't want to go back to work. They're looking more and more. The freelancing market is exploding. People trying to make a living online. The idea of I can make money with my gifts and talents is so exciting. If you had to give somebody some advice, like importing your car, but just steps, what would you tell somebody to do to discover their gifts, to develop them, and then to begin to figure out how to serve? And by serve, I mean build a business so people can pay you for doing what you love. What would you tell somebody?
First step is to find out what you like to do. Now, aside from the job that you had or still have, there are things that often, like people, when people just have a job, that's all it is. It's a job. It's not, they love to get up and go to work and do, you know, a lot of times they don't. It's something that, you know, pays their bills, keeps the roof over their head, etc. But when they're at home or at night or watching this show or that show, they think, I'd like to do that. I bet I could do that. Or they have a lot of hobbies that maybe they don't have time to get to, you know, but you got to start somewhere and start to develop what you like. So I had a friend years ago. She is in the travel industry, but she didn't really like it. You know, she, for years, she would say, I don't really want to do this. What she really wanted to do was cake decorating. So I said, hey, that sounds wonderful. You know, I mean, if you've seen some of those cakes, I mean, now they've got shows on TV, Cake Wars. And I mean, they're just, some of the things that people produce are just like mind blowing. And those are cakes. I mean, those are works of art. So she wanted to do that. And I said, well, sure. You know, your local, you know, the community college has a couple of these. We'll take a course. And I think she did. And, you know, she didn't really want to pursue it enough to give up the job that she hated in order to pursue something different. Now, with something like that, you can easily do something part-time. You can easily reach out to do things for free, even some cake decorating. But she decided to drop that. And instead, I think she decided she wanted to raise llamas or something like in the city. She didn't do that. You know, so in that respect, it has to be reasonable. No, you're not going to raise llamas in your backyard when you live in a townhouse. Like that doesn't make any sense. Or you're not going to go rent a farm and do something like that. You know, but the thing, you know, just the idea of cake decorating and put whatever it is in there that you want to do, pursue it. At least give it a shot. If that's something that you really want to do, okay. Or if you're just trying different things, maybe you try cake decorating this week and maybe you'll try, I don't know, pierogi making the next week, whatever it is, you still have to give it a shot and explore if that's something that truly is just a hobby or something that you'd really like to explore and see how to make money. And if you do want to make money, then do some research online. Like what sort of opportunities are there for people who want to make pierogies? Can you sell at your farmer's markets? I mean, everybody wants pierogies from the farmer's market, but what does it involve? What are the costs? What are the time commitments? What sort of materials? Are there some sort of rules around food handling that you need? Or is cake decorating maybe a different category? Maybe you want something easier, making soap or something. I don't know, but whatever it is, you got to take one step and pursue it and make a list of the things that you if you could have your Harry Potter wand and wave it and say, I'd like to do this, come up with a very long list of things that you'd like to try that you haven't tried. And then what are the things that legitimately, really, that you could make money? Because if somebody else is doing it, you could probably do it too. So that's where I'd start.
So that means I heard several things. One, look at things you like. Yeah. Two, do the research repeatedly. You've talked about it. Don't just wave a wand and assume you know, but do the research to find out what the opportunities are, because you're right. If money is moving for that product or service, there is room for you. And this is something that's so important and that you're so good at. And that is you always, you listeners, always can and will add your unique touch. Your cake decoration, your flavor for this food or that food, your coaching style, your pattern style, your whatever it is that you do, you have the ability to be different and good. Joy, I want to really thank you. This has been fun conversation. Do you have any parting words?
Do I have any parting words? You know, it just, you got to take that first step and just, you know, get inspiration, Pinterest, Etsy, because, you know, I'm in sort of the crafty world myself. So there's inspiration everywhere. Nature, maybe you've got an idea that says, you know, I think we should, boy, what if there was one of these? And, you know, explore, maybe you'll be the creator of it. I mean, somebody made, you know, post-it notes, right? That lady in Texas or wherever. I mean, you know, she came up with that. So there's people out there who are doing these things, but they took the bull by the horns and said, yeah, I think I'm going to do this. This is a winner. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but you'll never know if you don't try. That's for sure.
All right. Well, I want you as listeners to take this episode to heart. Take your first step. Have fun. I mean, you can see from Joy, she has fun doing everything. Work, not work. You know, that's a choice. It's a behavior you can have. You can hate everything or you can like it. You can roll with the punches or get knocked down. If you take your first step, if you choose to be optimistic, if you never quit, because quitting means dying. So if you do those things and just keep at it, you can make money with anything you want. You can create purpose, prosperity, and joy, and really come to live your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.